Okay. It is now my pleasure to introduce our speaker this evening, Adam T. from Santa Monica. Thank you.
My name's Adam. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Adam.
I want to first thank you for inviting me to come talk tonight. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. Ultimately, it's a responsibility to give back what was so freely given to me. I want to welcome you guys that are new. You know, if you're trying AA one more time, if you don't want to be here tonight, you know, if you don't think this will work for you, if you think this is all a big misunderstanding, you know, I didn't get to AA because I had a bad weekend. You know, I had a couple of bad decades. And Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't on my to-do list. I mean, I recycled through the rooms for 17 years. It was ridiculous. I mean, I had so many chips and key tags, I could have played poker with them. It's awful. I mean, it was horrible. I remember one secretary saying, give them back. You know, and I did that walk of shame over and over. And I thank God for the unconditional love and compassion of the old-timers who said, don't even bother taking chips. Just sit in the back. Shut up. You know, but they made it really clear to me when they said that if and when I was ready, that the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous would always be open for me. And, you know, there was so much guilt and shame about being new. I mean, what I would do is I would go into your head and look back at myself and think, what a loser. My gosh, why can't you get this? What's wrong with you? And I know the old timers were judging me. You know, if you're new, we're judging. We make bets. Think about it. I love it when they say, don't judge anybody in AA. You guys hear that around here? What do they tell you 5 minutes later? Stick with the winners. You know, I don't mean to be funny, but, you know, there's a lot of contradictions in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started coming to meetings drunk. I mean, and the funny thing about AA is if you see somebody drunk in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting these days, people say stuff like, what's he doing here? Right? Think about it. With the event of treatment, which swoops us up in our most desperate moments, you know, throws us into yoga class, craft hour. Sound familiar? Nature walks? You know, but what I would do is I would go to 7-Eleven, get a big gulp cup, fill it up with liquor, then I'd go to like the late night AA meeting, do some of my best sharing. You know, then I started going through treatment centers. This really feels like a treatment center to me, which is very familiar because by the time I finally got sober, I'd gone through treatment, by the way, 28 times. You know, not 28 days like the movie. You know, 28 times. And I remember telling my sponsor I went through treatment 28 times. You know, I was kind of hoping that would get rid of the guy, you know, loser. You know, go find someone that's willing. And he looks me right in the eye and he says, you know, that doesn't make you an alcoholic. And I thought, you're kidding. He says, no, it means you paid $500,000 for a big book. I wasn't laughing. You know, I didn't think that was funny. And I'm not going to start citing pages tonight out of the big book. But page 101 of the big book says, any scheme that attempts to shield the alcoholic from temptation is doomed to failure. See, treatment was a great place to fatten me up for another run, but treatment never solved the problem. And as an alcoholic, I always thought the problem was alcohol. And I remember a friend of mine saying, you know that bottle of Jack Daniels, that little drink, that little shot glass, that 12-pack? He said, if that's your problem, you're probably not an alcoholic. And then in the very next breath, he said to me, and if you are in fact an alcoholic, the type that's described in the doctor's opinion in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, your problem isn't alcohol. And you know what? It took me another decade to understand what he was trying to tell me. Because being an alcoholic, I always thought the problem was alcohol. From the time I was in junior high school, you know, I have to look back at it, and the real problem is I can't live with alcohol, but more so, I can't live without it. Not successfully, not happily. And looking back at my life, even as a teenager, I'm in eighth grade, and I'm already pissing in my pants, drooling on my desk, passed out under the bleachers. You know, my nickname is Space Cadet in eighth grade. I can't even find homeroom. Everyone can see I can't live with alcohol. But see, the greater aspect of this disease centering in my mind is the fact that I can't live without it. And what it really means for me to be an alcoholic is that I have a mind that somehow always takes me back to alcohol. I have a mind that always leads me back to a drink. It's almost like my default mode. And I didn't understand that until I adapted some principles in my life, it's almost automatic for me to drink again. I have no effective mental defense against the first drink. And my defiance towards spiritual principles kept me outside the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous most of my life. I have a defiant mind. I have a mind that'll argue with anybody about anything at any time. You tell me it's black, I'll tell you it's white. You tell me it's big, I'll tell you it's small. You tell me to go left, I'll go right with an attitude. Then I'll blame you for eternity. That's why we say denial is an acronym. It stands for don't even notice I am lying. Really, I mean, you can tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell them much. You don't believe me? Try sponsoring somebody. But it's like you can lead me into the gates of hell, but you can't push me into heaven. And that's why I'm so grateful for the traditions, that it's about attraction rather than promotion. That I had to get to Alcoholics Anonymous on my own terms. I had to lose in every imaginable way. I had to get to that place and have that same relationship with alcohol. Alcoholism comes in people. It doesn't come in bottles. You know, I can talk all day long about what gets me into this room as an alcoholic, but I think it's more important for me to focus on what keeps me here. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I was in one more facility, one more treatment center. I was 120 pounds. You know, I looked like a concentration camp victim. You know what I mean? I was dirty. I was hopeless. I let everybody down one more time. You know, remember that great feeling? Some of you guys, you know, in detox, you're probably just there, you know. And I'm sitting in this detox circle with my fellow associates. And this woman from AA comes in, you know, on her H&I panel, in her business suit. And she does her H&I talk. And at the end of her talk, she looks us all up and down and she says, if I could give you all the gift of recovery, I wouldn't do it. And I looked at her and I looked at the guy next to me and I said, what a bitch. And then she said something that would later change my life. She said, the reason I wouldn't give you the gift of recovery is because I wouldn't rob you of the journey. And you know what? All of these years later, I understand that that journey to recovery, just like that journey to surrender that each and every alcoholic has to walk, is personal. And you know what? If you're new, we can't give you that. That gift of desperation. It's a great acronym for God. You know, but until I got to a place in my life where my head couldn't get enough and my body couldn't take anymore, I didn't understand what it meant to drink against my will. To make that promise every day I wasn't going to drink tomorrow, that I was going to show up for my family, that I was going to show up for work, that I was going to finish my education. And every time it came time for me to stand and deliver, I showed up drunk. Then God means something totally different for me. It means grow or die. And then I know what it means to drink against my will. And as an alcoholic, you know what? I could write all day long on step one. Until I'd beaten down that door of the liquor store over and over and over again at 5:59 a.m. or, you know, paid the clerk at 7-Eleven $100 for a six-pack or driven all the way to Tijuana to get at the bar or done all those despicable, diabolical, disgusting things that every single one of us does on that journey to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, you think writing about it was going to save me? I had to have an experience with alcohol. I had to get to that place of hopelessness. You know, and it really is for me the gift of desperation. And, you know, I understand today that as a newcomer, there was a big difference between the act of surrender that got me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous as a newcomer over and over and over again, and the state of surrender that's keeping the old-timers here. And you know what? It's a completely different concept. It sounds like semantics, but it's kind of like watching a swan glide across a pond of still water. It's so beautiful. It's so effortless. It's so graceful. But you know what's going on under the water, right? That swan's paddling like hell. And I had to become willing to take actions in Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't believe in. I was asked to set aside everything I thought I knew about AA, about God, about the steps, so I could have a new experience with this thing. You know, if you're new, we have a chapter in the big book, Into Action. There's no chapter into feelings. No chapter into thinking. We ought to have a chapter into whining, right? From the podium at the noon meeting. I'm like, get a job, dude. And I had to become willing to take actions here. You know, it's like the seventh tradition. I thought the seventh tradition was about the dollar until someone said to me that it's about personal responsibility for my recovery, which is a completely different concept. I paid $500,000 for a big book, and all I had to do was roll up my sleeves and take some very simple, deliberate actions. The only thing people like me do in moderation, you know what it is, right? The steps. Think about it. You want to hide something from a newcomer? You know where you put it, right? Stick it in the big book. They'll never find it. You know, I go to this meeting down in Marina Del Rey where, you know, we call it the emergency room, right? All these guys pull up in their shopping carts. And, you know, we were putting $5 bills in the literature, in the pamphlets. 6 months later, every penny was still there. Tragedy. You know, and it was the last thing that I looked at was the steps. I thought that I was going to find recovery in the rooms. And someone pointed out to me that what you'll find in the rooms is hope and inspiration. That the recovery for someone like me had to be by taking specific actions. And somehow I'd sat in the rooms for 17 years and completely missed that concept. You know, fear won't keep someone like me sober. Getting a third strike, living on the street, being homeless, losing my career, throwing away my education. Did scared straight work for you guys? Went right over my head. You know, now interesting enough, the big book here talks about the problem drinker and illustrates the problem drinker as someone that can stop or moderate given sufficient reason, right? Huge difference between a problem drinker and a real alcoholic. You know, you get a problem drinker and a real alcoholic in a jail cell for, say, drunk driving, you get two completely different philosophies going on. You got the problem drinker over here on one side of the cell thinking, why did I drink so much last night? I knew I shouldn't have drank so much. Real alcoholic sitting over here on the other side of the cell thinking, why did I take the 101? Oh, the court card people never laugh at that joke. Right? Should have took the 5. You could have been home cleaning your pipe right now. Problem drinker's wife says, honey, if you don't stop drinking, I'm leaving you, right? Problem drinker cleans up his act, doesn't drink in the house, gets a little Visine. Now, if my woman says, honey, if you don't stop drinking, I'm leaving you, you know what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking about single life. And my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous and alcohol is very similar. That if anything got in the way of booze, it was out of my life. Alcohol completed me. It had me from hello. Alcohol was the love of my life. You think I'm going to let go of the love of my life without a fight? The word concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, just the word. Concede means to surrender with a fight. Every drunk defends their right to drink. And my experience is if anything got in the way of alcohol, it was out of my life. In order for me to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous in the middle of this thing, if anything gets in front of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's out of my life. A woman, I don't care how beautiful she is, how much she loves me, how great she makes me look. I remember the first time I said that from the podium, there she was in the back of the room. She's like, honey, you don't look like an alcoholic. Oh my God, why do you got to go to all those meetings, sweetie? Oh, you're not speaking again, are you? Next thing she tells me, you know that program you got? It's getting in the way of our relationship. So a couple months later, it's Thanksgiving dinner. Out comes the exotic wine. You know, it's meet the parents night. I'm all dressed up in a suit and tie. She's like, sweetie, you can have one glass of wine. It's just a glass of wine. Come on, honey, it's natural wine. Four more rehabs. Yeah, I stole her purse that night. Went down to the hood and got an outside issue. And she came to detox with a get well card. I think I got four cards from that one. Yeah, for her, a slip was 10 minutes of compassion. No offense. I tried to send her to Codependence Anonymous. She wouldn't go. You know why? She didn't have anyone to go with. Just checking you guys' pulse, make sure you're awake. You know, but that's the reality. You know, if anything gets in the way of my program, it's out of my life. I have sponsees that pay more in taxes than I earn all year. They have these huge careers and these little tiny AA programs. I've never seen one of them stand the test of time here. What do I do for a living? I stay sober. Oh, what do I do for money? That's over there. Now, if I get those two things mixed up, I'm in handcuffs. I get those two things mixed up, I'm back in an emergency room. Or I get a double header, I'm handcuffed to a gurney in an emergency room. But that may not be your experience. My experience is anything I put in front of my recovery has been removed from my life, whether I'm drunk or sober. And it's important that I understand that. It doesn't mean I can't have a big life, but it means I have to have an equally big program. And what I did over and over and over again is I would build Alcoholics Anonymous around my big life. And as my life got bigger, Alcoholics Anonymous becomes really inconvenient. And what I've really had to do is I've had to build my life around Alcoholics Anonymous. It's kind of like being in the program or on the program. Sounds like the same thing. It's like being in a submarine or on a submarine. When the ship takes a dive, you'll find out if you're in it or on it. You know, and for me, when it became a matter of life and death, then I started to look at AA completely differently. Totally differently. It's like a four-step. It's amazing how quick you'll write a four-step when you got a gun to your head. You know, and that's the place that I had to get to with this thing. You know, I had to understand that some of these concepts, you know, like willingness. You ever notice that there's a direct relationship between willingness and surrender? For me, there is. You'll never see anybody more willing to work this program than the guy that comes crawling through the back door after a long, hard run. He'll do anything, right? 90 meetings in 90 days. First day out of treatment, he's got three sponsors. You know, wants to take our whole coffee pot home with him. Doesn't even have a trunk to put it in. And then 30, 60, 90 days later, that same guy's looking me right in the eye saying, you mean we got to go to meetings every day? And like a prize fighter, what I do is I throw in the towel and then I take that towel back one little piece at a time. I take my will back. And I'm back out there again. Or back in here with a bracelet. You know, self-knowledge won't fix me. I've had every relapse prevention class known to man. I can't make it past a liquor store. You know, and I'm back in treatment one more time or back on Skid Row, drooling on myself, reciting chapter 5 out of the big book. And the bum next to me is like, will you shut up, man? You're ruining my high. And I'm crying because I can't get back here. Because I got a head full of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a belly full of booze, and I'm separate, different, and alone one more time. And if you think that sounds painful, you know what's worse? Being in this room tonight, being a real alcoholic, and not working the 12 steps, it could be worse. Coming to meetings late, leaving early, not having friends, not having a sponsor, not having a purpose. You got no anesthesia.